We will be looking at the ideas today of instinct and intuition. We will do the first part of the panel on instinct, and then followed by the panelists will be discussing intuition. So, as was said in the announcements, this month we've been looking at the whole idea of the mystery of mind. We've had some very interesting ideas and discussions, and we will be ending that monthly discussion with instinct and intuition. So we'll start off with this idea of exactly what is instinct. And it is in theosophy, it is looked at as being the direct perception of what is right within its own realm. And when it says within its own realm, we're looking at the idea, most of the time when we think of instinct, we're thinking of the animal kingdom. But the lower plants and even minerals have instinct as well. So, with the animal kingdom, when it says within its own realm, we're looking at this idea. Well, let's look at a wolf pack. They follow very strict regulations, for lack of a better term. It's like there's a lead pair, male and female, that will lead the pack, and it will always be a male and female that will lead the pack. And they know how to arrange themselves when they're going after some prey. So, and birds, they automatically know when it's time to fly south or north. So, these are, when it says direct perception of what is right within its own realm, that's what we're talking about when it says within its own realm. And it's acquired experience. And this realm is not by reasoning experience, but feeling. And as we just said, it's within the lower kingdoms. So it's interesting because it's also the idea that it's an unconscious direction, impression that the lower kingdoms have when it comes to instinct. And when we're looking at each species, it is nature's united mind that is being expressed. So when the animals, I mean, their instinct is for food, shelter, safety, taking care of their young. And they do it automatically. If anybody has been lucky enough to have a litter of puppies or kittens, you can see how the mother, sometimes the father, will automatically take care of, and the mother will nurse and clean, and they teach the babies how they're supposed to act in regards to their. If they're dogs or cats. And it's an unconscious expression by the individual animal. This knowledge has been accumulated, and it is just an inward motivation on the part of the animal. And one of the most incredible this student thinks is an expression of instinct is that of a honeybee when it makes its hive. And even a wasp, a paper wasp, when it makes its nest, it is, I mean, both of them, I mean, they can be massive in size. And the bees have a very strict hierarchy, which is all instinct-based. So, how does instinct work then? It is a universal experience, and it's given to nature by the spirit of deity itself. And deity being one of the major being one of the fundamentals of the philosophy, deity is in everything. It's not just in the human kingdom. It's not just the animal, even the plants. Everything has that spark of consciousness, but there are different levels of consciousness. The human being's the only self-conscious being in the universe. So we will be looking at intuition, which is a higher expression of deity. So in the lower kingdoms, we do not have this self-conscious expression. So the kingdoms react in regards to instinct. It's a reflex action on their part. As a divine spark, it is impressed, it's embedded in the animal or the plant psyche, but it is reflex action. It manifests in all kingdoms as well as humans, and we all know that we have instinct, but that instinct, since we have animal lives that make up our bodies, then we know that our lower animal nature encompasses these same animal desires for safety, food, etc. So, and we know what we've, if anybody has seen a newborn or even a little older infant, if they get startled or, if they're going to drop, they flail their arms out as a safety mechanism. This is an instinct on that level. And we know if we're being threatened, there's that whole idea of safety and trying to find a safe place to go, like with these awful fires and the hurricanes and the floods. There's that instinct for safety to go look for something that is a safe place to be. So we're just going to read a short quote from Magazine Theosophy, Volume 23, and it's on page 563. It's called The article is called "What is Instinct?" And we're just going to read the last part, the middle part in the paragraph. It says, "Instinct is the universal endowment of nature by the spirit of deity itself, and is in every form of life and being. The divine instinct in its ceaseless progress of development, that spark of the divine which lurks in every particle of inorganic matter itself, materialized spirit. Mainly what this is talking about is when it says the divine instinct in its ceaseless progress of development, we're talking about evolution here. So instinct is carried on as well from evolution and reincarnation. It goes from life to life. It carries through. So, instinct is declared to be direct consciousness as a group conscious. And it's interesting, the article that we read talked about perception without an instrument. And we thought that was a curious statement when it says without an instrument. And it is not an individual expression what instinct is. In the lower kingdoms, it's a group instinct. And when it talks about without an instrument, in humans, it's particular. So, because we are self-conscious, then it is looked at when it says perception without an instrument, we are an individual instrument. So instinct acts on us alone. And in humans, it is the lowest reflection of lower mind. The bringing back of knowledge also explains instinct, the recollection divisible into physical and mental memory seen in animals and children as the result of previous experience. And we find it interesting, especially when animals migrate, not just birds, but butterflies migrate as well. And in Africa, we have seen movies and videos of these huge migrations of like the antelopes. And when it talks about the bringing back of knowledge, this is being brought back, and somehow it is impressed upon the animal's lower mind. It's all the effect of reincarnation acting either in the mind or physical cell. And we don't know if everybody has heard the expression muscle memory, but it's an interesting phenomena, especially for those of us that have played musical instruments, because the muscles remember. After a while, once you learn all the notes, it's like, you know exactly where to put your fingers. So when it talks about acting either in the mind or physical self, this can be one example of that. So we think that might be a, oh, we did want to bring forth yesterday, a reference was handed in by a student and it was emailed out. And we're not sure if everybody has got, everybody should have received it, but we don't know if everybody's had a chance to read it. But we do want to end our talk with a reading, with a quote from it. And it is from HPB's articles. Volume 1, page 428. And HPB says, "The instinct of which I speak, being a projection of our perceptive consciousness, a projection which acts from the subjective to the objective and not vice versa, awakens in us spiritual senses and power to act. These senses assimilate to themselves the essence of the object or of the action under examination and represent it to us as it really is, not as it appears to our physical senses or to our cold reason. She also says, it is, however, only by the aid of this faculty that men can ever see things. Oh, excuse us, that is intuition. And that will go on to the next panelist who will talk about intuition. Thank you.
Okay, as we grasp now, if instinct is direct perception of what is right, according to the possibilities and the limits of the being using instinct, intuition is a direct cognition of the truth in all things. So the distinction is made for the mind being who has the instrument, who has the connection, the physical brain and the use of individualized self-conscious mind. And we use reason. Reason in the human being is the balance between instinct and intuition. The human being can use reason as regards to both instinct and intuition. And what we mean by this, so when we're using reason, if we are thinking from a false basis, we can convince ourselves that what we're saying is true because it may appear to be reasonable based on how we're thinking. The logic of it may work, but if the basis from which we're thinking or the premise from which we're thinking is not true, then the result, the conclusions are not going to be true. Working logically, we can come to right conclusions, Mr. Crosby says, only with an eternal premise or a universal premise, and no other way can we be right in the way we see the world around us unless we're thinking from an eternal premise. The true foundation of instinct and intuition is necessary to grasp if we want to understand these powers. So, what is this true foundation? Well, everything has a source. Both instinct in the animal world and the human world, as well as intuition, yes, it evolves. And it has a source. Now, as regards intuition, it is to the real man, the inner man, the ego, that intuition pertains. Both instinct and intuition have been gained through observation and experience. Both. Both of them are gained by observation and experience. The instinct of animals is gained in any particular species along that lines of their growth and intelligence, progressively evolved bodies. Man's intuition carries with it all the knowledge gained in all of his previous experiences throughout all lives. So that is within us. We can tap into that. It is available to the human being. It's a part of our true nature. Each night, during deep sleep, when we have passed the dreaming state, we are now on the plane of the total accumulated wisdom that we've experienced throughout these lives. In this state lies the source, shall we say, of intuition. And each night there is the possibility, there is the potential, there is the opportunity to bring some of that back with us from our sleep into our waking state. When we're able to do this, we've read that it is this, the voice of the conscience. This is the point of view from our true nature, giving guidance upon whatever the object of our intuition is. It's like the voice of the silence whispering to you, with the understanding necessary in the moment. From this space of accumulated wisdom, which is within ourself, intuition flows, and we may gain better clarity by better understanding who we are. We may gain better clarity of our intuition by understanding who and what we actually are. Man, know thyself, and thou shalt know God and the universe. Understanding who we truly are is directly related to the principles of life we hold to be true, and our efforts to exemplify these principles in our world by the way that we live. Now, so to bring clarity or greater, yes, just to bring more clarity to the intuition that is available to us, we have a brain that responds to this. And today they use the word plasticity. We have a plastic brain that accommodates, that changes, that adapts in function and in form to new ideas that we hold to be true. The brain will adjust its own structure and function. It will become more fit to be the better able to help others. And our understanding is that it is this about our brain making the brain porous to the dictates of the soul to which Mr. Judge refers. Our ideas that we hold will always evolve. So, if it's our ideals that will always evolve, then it's given that it's how we think. How we think limits our perception or how clearly our intuitions come through, and therefore helps or hinders how we react and act in certain situations. This outer nature, the personality, in particular, the lower mind, needs clarifying. How do we clarify the personality? Well, we have to act for and as the one self. Live and think as ourselves. I am that. This will make adjustments. This gives expression to our real natures in this material world, and we gain a more direct cognition of the truth when we live from that place, from a third-party position, observing the world around us and accepting I'm more than what I'm looking at. I am that, and living for all creatures with the intentions and motive to do the right thing in the moment without regard to anything that may without regard to anything that we may have to our advantage in any situation. So this is the purpose for which theosophy has been made public in this cycle of public expression. That we can learn this. We can open and widen the pathway of our own divine nature. We do so as we dismiss false religious ideas and prevarications descended to us from wherever it may have come, whether family, church, false education, or scandals from previous lives that we've had that we have yet to shake off. This path on our way, the widening of the possibility for our own divine nature to shine through, this is the path tested by the masters and is the only true way for all souls, or we could even say for all soul. All our accumulated wisdom from all our past lives is able to be tapped into when we're developed to the point where it's the right thing, where it's the natural next step. That's where our elder brothers are. All beings who have appeared in this world as elder brothers are at the stage that we are now proceeding as we live these universal principles of theosophy as we apply them in our lives and learn and grow from them. Our intuition today is not so asleep as some of us might think. We have to trust it, we have to test it. To develop our intuition, you have to use it. If you don't use it, you'll lose it. It is shining within us all the time, but it's our false conceptions of the external world that prevent us from seeing it. By search, we can draw back the veil and let the light shine through by making these principles a living power in our other lives and by their exemplification of the true ideas that we hold dear and live by. So, with that, all contributions and insights and questions are certainly welcome. When you're answering a question or when you're asking a question, please indicate to which panelist you're directing the question or to both, however you want to do. Thank you. Asel.
So this question has to do with instinct, and we certainly can appreciate the harmony of beauty of instinct if we watch fishes swimming in a beautiful spiral circle, or the birds swarming in ever-changing geometrical patterns. It's amazing. And we being having that animal nature in us, our instincts should be naturally beautiful and helpful. We speak of gut feelings and following our instincts, but what corrupts the instinct? How has the instinct in each one of us become corrupted so it is no longer a reflection of this natural and beauty and harmony in nature?
We think that it's probably the materialistic age that we live in, that we are looking towards more of a outward expression rather than trusting our instincts, just like we learn to trust our intuition. So it's we think it has to do with the ideas that we hold, the fact that maybe we're not focused on our inward life, but we're looking more for a materialistic life. But the thing is, we think that instinct will work no matter what, because as we said in the talk, we are We are looking for safety. We are looking for shelter. We are looking for food. We instinctively, if we have children, we instinctively want to take care of them. And depending upon what type of reincarnation, the lives that we've received from the past, we think that automatically, if we're looking at, say, music or math, we think that that sometimes can be an instinctive impression that we have. So we, in response to the question, we think what we think that what will cause us to not be that instinctive is just the ideas that we hold and that we're looking for outward rather than an inward life. Theosophy Hall.
So is reason an aid or a hindrance to our instinct?
We think that's our other panelist.
Sure. So the question is reason an aid or a hindrance to our instinct? Well, if we are reasoning correctly, but admit to ourselves, we don't have complete clarity of our own intuition, but live our lives in the most universal way that we can, and think from that basis, then certainly that's no hindrance. That helps us to understand more clearly. And just as surely, so many times with right motive, we still may not get it right. Still yet, the karma of that action will come back to us and give us the opportunity to learn more clearly how to respond in that kind of a situation. If we're reasoning from the correct basis, from a for what's in it for everybody, how can I be of service to this person? What does my friend, partner, coworker need that I see that I can help them attain, maybe without even letting them know about it? When we operate from that basis, that opens the floodgates, so to speak, just an expression. But there are other floodgate or but there are other gates that close when, in response to our neighbor, we're deliberately holding back or deliberately deceiving them, et cetera, or just being selfish, just being selfless rather than selfish. Okay, so back to the question. Is reason a hindrance or does it help us along the way? It's all based on motive and effort to see the truth in a thing.
And HPB says that in regards to how reason will affect instinct, she does say that it, as reason develops, instinct will kind of fall by the wayside. So there are times when instinct needs to be in the forefront, like for protecting ourselves, but reason for just, we guess, just for day-to-day things, reason can interfere with the development of instinct.
So.
Once again, on the subject of reason, in that quote read from HPB's article, it was mentioned that instinct can play out in the physical nature, but also in the mental nature. So, what role do the skandhas play in the way we react instinctively on the mental plane? With the way we think, how we approach things, how we understand the world we relate to. How do the skandhas relate to that?
Well, the skandhas are like bundles of our of our personality that kind of follow us from life to life. And they have to do with our physical nature, our emotional nature, all those types of things. So when we come into this life, the skandhas will affect us in how we react to different situations, whether it be the mental nature, emotional nature, physical nature, they will determine how we react. So if we're looking at instinct, then in regards to the skandhas, then the skandhas and how we react mentally, physically, emotionally will also affect our responses in regards to the our instinctual reaction to things, like our gut feeling about something. If we meet somebody, we just have this negative feeling about them, then depending on our skandhas, we may or may not really go with it when we talk about our gut feeling. So, does my partner have anything to add?
Well, as regards skandhas, let's look at it from this perspective. You know, skandhas have a source. They don't come from nowhere. And they are a force. The source of this force is our own thoughts and actions in past lives. The quality of our skandhas is kind of the accumulated outcome of how we've been living our past lives. So in this life, if there, it's helpful and important to know the ideas of skandhas and what they are. But in any given situation, are we going to like, no, oh, well, these are my skandhas? No, it doesn't work that way. But what we do know is there is a force that is present often
Going
that's going to influence.
here. What you doing here?
Could we all please
Afraid
mute our
of
microphones?
that.
Please, we got it. So,
Unmute TK.
okay. So, in any given lifetime, so we may feel a force that incents us to respond in a certain way to a certain to okay. But that can be the effect of past lifetimes. If we're centered in ourselves and are open to the intuition, to the divine source of what is true, as opposed to the force of our past personalities pushing, the tendencies, call them patterns, call them habits, whatever we want to call them. They're of a completely different nature, but you don't just, skandhas don't just disappear. They are a karmic force. So to deal with them, we actually have to move often in the opposite direction of those skandhas to sort of deflate the force of them. We have to overcome any kind of tendency that we have toward the I, me, my of all of our past lives. And fortunately, in every life, we have access to the we, us, ours of universal thinking that we have participated in all these lives. And in this one life, it's really a choice. How are we living our lives? Are we empowering the divine within with knowledge and understanding and patience and faith in that? Or are we distracted by that because of ignorance and fear and superstition? And do we react to the things around us, which are all coming to us because we caused them in our pathway? So that might help us grasp the nature of skandhas and how to deal with them.
We have a chat, and then there's three hands going up in Theosophy Hall. What is the difference between intuition and our conscience?
If a fair question, a lot of people, through the years, we always hear that. And in particular with this study, we saw in the teachings that there's we hear the voice of conscience. Conscience is, we've always understood conscience to be related in some way to past experiences. And in these studies that we've done, conscience was used as kind of a synonym, as the voice of intuition or the voice of the silence. So that's where we are right there, but don't take that as concrete because get what you pay for, right? So just look it up. Yes, SL.
Well, just to jump in to follow up on that, yes, conscience is an aspect of our intuition, but the way it comes through, which distinguishes it from intuition, it's a feeling that we shouldn't do something, but it doesn't tell us what we should do. It's a warning. Conscience comes through as a warning from our previous experience. Now, it may be from this life, or it may be from previous experiences, but we know we shouldn't touch something, do something, say something. We don't know how we got that knowledge, but we follow it. Intuition's different because that tells us in the moment how we should act, what we should say, what is the right and what is the wrong thing to do.
Thank you.
So we have hands back here.
Oh,
Yes.
going back to the way that instinct can get corrupted, isn't that an example of the danger of passivity when we passively absorb instincts that aren't necessarily our own, such as society's instinct for self-preservation in some cases that are exclusionary or negatively discriminatory towards specific groups?
Yes, we think that being passive is one of the ways that can corrupt instinct because, in many respects, when one is passive, they're looking, it's an outward expression of listening to really loud, raucous music, watching not very, high movies or TVs. It just diverts us from an inward life. So we think being passive would definitely affect us. We thought there were, yes, MDW.
Does reincarnation have any bearing upon the instinctual kingdoms versus those that are intuitive? Is there any, does reincar how does reincarnation affect, both those kinds of ideas?
So, how does reincarnation affect the higher and the lower kingdoms? Is that basic?
Correct.
Okay. Well, we think, especially with the higher, with the human kingdom, what is brought forth from previous lives can affect our instinctual response. And we wonder then, with what we're bringing forward, if that would develop our reasoning ability, which, as HPB says, that can decrease our instinctual response. And because the lower kingdoms is, we think, especially the animal kingdoms, they're karma and reincarnation is like a group type of response. So we think that whatever we actually aren't 100% sure how reincarnation then would affect the lower kingdoms, because we think that their instinct is based upon what is going on with them in the moment. So if anybody else would like to respond to that.
Well, let's think about that. You know, so instinct in the human being, the source of the human being's instinct is his own inner nature, as was mentioned in the first in the first talk by our fellow panelist, that the human being has an instrument through which instinct operates. The animal kingdom, it is, and that instrument, you know, because we are self-conscious mind beings, we own it, you know, and the instrument through which we operate is the brain. Fine. The lower kingdoms do not have the instrument. Now, they have a brain, don't they? But they don't have an instrument, as in they don't have a self-conscious mind. So right there, with regard to instincts, they are relieved, or yeah, we'll just relieved or excluded for any kind of moral responsibility for anything that they do. What is but instinct? Okay, so what is the mind that's acting within the animal? It's, we like to call it universal intelligence. We can call it the hierarchy of intelligences, you know, because intelligent, you know, universal intelligence, there are seven hierarchies, there are seven functions, there are different grades. And so the lower, and yet intelligence continues to evolve. So in the lower organisms of animals, behind that instinct is the lower degree of intelligence. And when we talk about the reincarnation of animals, we're not talking that Rover gets reincarnated and when he comes back, he's going to be this. No, when Rover dies, he's done. But the intelligence which informed Rover is continuing to flow into greater, you know, in higher and higher degrees, and in with each higher degree, it is able to, so to speak, inform a higher, more complex organization, more complex being, a more complex animal, however you want to look at that. And that animal in that species, so this is just as the human being has access to all of the wisdom of past lives through Buddhi, through his divine nature, the animal has access to all of the instinct of all of that type of all in that species from what the entire species has experienced through its existence. And there's an example of this, a fascinating example, which is called the 100th monkey theory. And it was shown that, you know, you had two populations of monkeys on two completely different islands. And on one island, this population was taught something like how to crack open a coconut with a rock. And many of them were taught, prior to this, they never did it. Once a critical mass of the monkeys on the one island learned how to do it, monkeys on the other island figured out how to do it. Now, this may be whether it's an analogy for how instinct works, or maybe it's directly an example of how instinct works, how intelligence is shared metaphysically, because that's what we're talking about, is metaphysics. It's all for us to investigate on our own and deduce for ourselves. But the teachings are that, you know, the intelligence flows through the form from the lowest degree to the highest degree, that Rover doesn't reincarnate as another animal. Rover's done when Rover's done, not until the human being, not until the human stage, when we are self-conscious mind beings, does the mind reincarnate for the purpose of assisting the evolution of all. And that's why we're here.
We have
Go ahead.
We have a chat that's been posted for a while.
Okay, we'll get it. Our instinct and intuition seem to be an interwoven part of our physical and mental constitution. In the process of developing intuitive capabilities, are there practical measures we can take to optimize these faculties? For example, regarding the brain, perhaps remapping or rewiring toward the eternal premises, or perhaps the nervous system, to fine-tune and rewire our steps for our own evolution. Yes, and that's what we're talking about in the philosophy, and taking these steps are an individual decision on how each is going to do it for himself, realizing that how we think, the basis from which we think, that's what theosophy is for. To help us understand the importance of universal thinking. Beyond that, how we choose to live our lives, how we choose to apply these principles, how persistent we are at it, what are our meditative practices, consistencies, etc. That's all. Like perhaps remapping or rewiring the brain. That's what Mr. Judge is talking about when he uses the expression, making the soul porous, or making the brain porous to the soul. And then the question, the second, in the philosophy of theosophy, are there specific references to help illustrate some practical means and methods toward advancing intuitive capability? And those practical means, they are there to be found. We would encourage, you know, a lot of this has to do with intuition, because you're not going to find an authority in the United Lodge of Theosophy, Theosophists, who dubs himself a bishop, telling you how to live a more spiritual life. We don't do that. However, there's the key to theosophy. There's the Bhagavad Gita. There's Patanjali's yoga aphorisms. And there's a lot of time that needs to be put into it, but you never know, you know, as much time as we put into it, how long do we have to until we see a result? Don't worry about the result. Just do what's right and follow one's own conscience. Go ahead, Theosophy Hall.
No, I was just shutting something off, but we are timed.
Oh, are we time out?
Yeah. So just want to thank everyone for joining us today, and hope to see you all on Wednesday. Thank you.